Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we follow up on the clown archetype. There are many faces of this archetype throughout history, but the quote, evil clown has taken center stage in the horror genre in popular culture. We touched on this with past guest Michael Balla and referenced the Stephen King novel, It. In one description of the book, which featured a demented, murderous clown named Pennywise, it reads, quote, "It did for clowns what Psycho did for showers, and what Jaws did for swimming in the ocean." Michael Balla suggested that Pennywise is the expression of repressed desires and fears. The sewers represent the subconscious realm. There's a deep reservoir of examples and illustrations of the evil clown. It could actually be eclipsing the non-evil clown archetype. I'm not sure. How did the evil clown genre emerge? Was it side by side from the beginning? Buried in this research is also the Freemason or Shriner's connection, which has undoubtedly influenced the genre throughout the decades with pins, posters, and tattoos. There's also the evolution of the dark side of funny, the psychotic homicidal maniacs or malevolent tricksters and pranksters, where the shadow archetype emerges naturally over time, processing through the collective consciousness. The clown's appearance is devilish, with a chalk-white face, bright-colored hair, and a ghoulish large mouth. The scene is often set with slightly out-of-tune carnival music. A late storm rumbles through the area, and now the deserted circus tents are silhouetted on the outskirts of a small New England town. As the wind picks up, you hear the cackling of the evil clown in the distance. Carl Jung was a Swiss psychotherapist and psychiatrist, and the founder of analytical psychology. In 1917, he wrote in his essay, quote, "On the Psychology of the Unconscious," about the personal shadow as the other in us. The negative side of the personality, the sum of all unpleasant qualities we like to hide. It embarrasses us or shames us. Quote, "Everything with a substance casts a shadow. The ego stands to the shadow as light to shade." As listeners may know, jesting and clowning is a very ancient art that can be traced through Egypt and medieval Europe. That's plenty of time for the shadow to develop. Our guest, Lori Shapira, joins us to talk about the shadow side of the clown archetype. Lori is a teacher at the C.G. Jung Institute of New York and former president of its board of directors. She's a filmmaker and author of The Cassandra Complex, Living with Disbelief, A Modern Perspective on Hysteria. She also wrote, directed, and produced the film titled The Prophecy of the Seeress. And you can find that at cassandra-productions.com. Lori, welcome to another news.
Hi, Jeff. It's great to be back with you.
Lori, we had on Michael Balla, a certified Jungian analyst, to talk about the clown archetype, and we touched on the shadow aspects of the clown. In our last interviews that we did, called The Shadow Project, we examined the timelessness of the human shadow in many films and popular stories that sometimes depict a character making a transformation by absorbing the shadow personality. Well, I checked in with you recently about this interview, and you had been interviewed earlier this year by the Wall Street Journal for an article about evil clowns titled, "On Screen, Clowns Go From Funny to Freaky." What are the odds of that? As many listeners know, the evil clown has emerged strongly in the last few decades, depicted mainly as a sadistic, murderous psychopath. Perhaps by examining the origin and context of clowns in world history, we can get some answers. Can you describe the structures of the human personality, first of all, in Jungian psychology, such as the self and ego, and tell us where the shadow is located?
Sure. This goes back to our previous interviews from the Shadow Project. The ego is the part of the personality that is who you think you are. And the shadow is who you think you're not, but in fact is some part of you a little bit farther from your consciousness and tends to kind of sneak up behind you and act out and, you wonder if the devil made you do it. It is part of the personality, and important that we know what our shadow is, that each of us knows who that is in ourselves. The self is sort of the supraordinate personality. It's the sum of all the parts of the personality, and kind of runs the show, even if our measly egos don't understand that. And specifically, I mean, we talked the last time about different forms, ways that the shadow can manifest itself. And here we're talking about the shadow of the clown. If the shadow usually represents the dark aspect or underbelly, the side that is not so obvious, then if we look at clowns, on the face of it, clowns are supposed to make us laugh. They wear silly clothes and do zany, ridiculous things. And traditionally, their playful antics are supposed to give us some comic relief at the circus, in between other acts where the tension is high, like the flying trapeze or the lion tamer. But in fact, many people suffer from what is called coulrophobia, or a fear of clowns. So what is it that makes clowns scary? It's complicated. First of all, even their clothes, their makeup and behavior are funny, but it's all very exaggerated and fake, especially the big red smile. When you look past the makeup, the person acting the clown isn't smiling at all. You wonder what's underneath that mask. There's a hint of something tragic, crazy, even sinister there. A clown face often has little tears on his cheeks. He has wild hair or big scary teeth. In a research survey conducted by the University of Sheffield in the UK in 2008, researchers concluded that clowns are actually disliked by children, who often find them to be, quote, frightening and unknowable. There's speculation that this demonization of the clown is recent, during the last 30 years or so. From the 1950s through the 70s, it was popular for children to have a clown as entertainment at birthday parties. In the 1980s, that custom was pretty much stopped dead in its tracks after a fellow named John Wayne Gacy was arrested for sexually assaulting and murdering 33 young men in and around the Chicago area. Gacy was a well-known businessman who, in his spare time, performed as Pogo the Clown at birthday parties and other events in the community. A biography was written about him called The Killer Clown. After that, the image seems to have stuck with a run on movies and TV shows which portrayed evil clowns. In 1982, the movie Poltergeist showed a spooky clown doll that tries to pull the child under the bed and foreshadows the dreadful events that are about to happen. In 1988, a movie came out called Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I have to say, I did not see it.
It's on my list.
Okay. It was apparently a big hit. In 1990, in the movie that you referred to called It, based on the Stephen King novel, portrayed a terrifying clown called Pennywise who kills the children in a small New England town. There was Krusty the Clown on The Simpsons and the Joker from Batman, which was Heath Ledger's last role before his death, which makes it even spookier.
Yeah, there's something going on, even with the actors being that are chosen to play the Joker for the Batman series.
Yeah.
And the Joker has a female jester counterpart.
And there's that rock group called Insane Clown Posse, which I also have not partaken of.
They're called Juggalos, the ones that follow the Insane Clown Posse.
Okay. There's Twisty the Clown, who scared the hell out of television viewers on last year's American Horror Story called Freak Show. So it really looks like clowns have basically become another stock evil character, like vampires and zombies.
It's quite interesting. And the areas that we're going to bring up all lend toward building the structures of the evil clown in our society. Now, Lori, what treasure, because there's often treasure in the shadow that Jungian analysts often talk about, but what treasure could the shadow hold within the clown archetype?
Well, Jeff, I have a hard time with that idea because, traditionally, the Jungian idea is that by relating yourself consciously to your shadow, that you are going to pick up pieces of yourself that got lost along the way, and you will become a more whole person. And that the process of the dialogue between the shadow and the ego, between unconscious and conscious, yields something larger than the ego. But these dark manifestations of the clown are so dark, I think it actually reveals to us something about our culture and society, something really deeply neurotic, maybe even psychotic.
You mean, is there anything redeeming in this shadow?
Per se, I think it's actually, there may be some redemption, but before I go into what the redemption might be, let me say that the darkness of this shadow, I feel, is being exploited by the entertainment industry and the advertising industry. I mean, these films, these movies and TV shows are titillating, they're terrifying. But what's the point? What's the value that comes out of it? There's a lot of money to be made on these kinds of programming, but there's something immoral, I find deeply immoral about it.
I think what I'm hearing here also is the evil clown is partially a manifestation of something being an exploited fear within human beings.
Exactly. I'm not sure that all the writers know what they're doing, but in the movie Poltergeist, the mother, early on in the film, the mother is sitting on the couch reading a book. It's a Jungian book. It's a book written by Jung. I actually don't remember. I think it was Man and His Symbols. Might have been his autobiography, Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. But I believe it was Man and His Symbols, and it's not an accident that they're doing a close-up on the title of this book. Obviously, the filmmakers are trying to tell us something. They're telling us that there's depth here. There's something more than just a good scary story. That there's some kind of psychological meaning going on here. So it's not something random. Sometimes filmmakers know what they're writing about. They understand the psychology and the archetypal meaning. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're just writing what comes out of their gut. But it's in the zeitgeist anyway. It's still coming from a place of knowledge, even if it's unconscious knowledge.
So wherever the clown, the evil clown, had started, maybe on accident or not, it certainly was picked up by other directors and writers and placed into center stage of these feature films in the horror genre mainly. These writers know, they know the impact this archetype will have on the human psyche It's to the point where, yes, there's a phobia, but it carries into the adulthood of some of those children. It's interesting, the specific energy flowing through the vessel of the clown archetype has taken form throughout centuries. I think that adds to the creepiness when we see the shadow of this archetype, that it's so old. Why are clowns associated with evil and with the supernatural?
Well, even though the evil clown has gone to the extreme in the last 40 years, the clown has always been on the borderline of weirdness throughout history, cross-culturally. There's documented evidence of the existence of clowns from, you mentioned earlier, from dynastic Egypt, ancient China, Persia, India, Greece, Rome, and among Native Americans. The function of the clown is to hold a mirror up to the social order, to make us see ourselves and even laugh at ourselves. Archetypally, the clown is related to the jester, the fool, or the trickster who disrupts the status quo. He turns the known world upside down. He counters the innately conservative nature of human beings and, in the best scenario, opens us up to change and growth. Well-known trickster figures are Hermes in ancient Greece, Loki in Norse mythology, and Coyote in Aboriginal North America. They're famous for playing tricks, making mischief, and being deceivers, as well as magical shapeshifters. They defy boundaries. Hermes wears winged sandals so he can move swiftly between the world of men and the world of the gods. His Roman counterpart, Mercury, gave his name to that curious but toxic element which is both liquid and solid, and also to the alchemical tincture that is the crucial ingredient for the transformation of lead into gold. It is his ambivalent, ambiguous nature that exemplifies the trickster. He has a big shadow. In medieval Europe, the court jester was the only one who could openly mock and criticize the king, mostly because he did it with humor and wit. Even if in good fun and with the intention to entertain, he brings out uncomfortable truths about ourselves. He treads on what is taboo in polite conventional society. He borders on bad taste. He can embarrass, shock, humiliate. Therefore, he is dangerous, subversive. He's a revolutionary.
Lori, in the book, The Trickster and the Supernatural by George Hansen, there's a quote here. Clowns have many striking characteristics as well as links with shamanism, fools, and clowns. And their subclasses of tricksters and share most essential qualities, including their association with supernatural, with the supernatural, their connection with the paranormal is unmistakable. I was thinking the evil clown might be a symptom of losing the shaman in a tribe. And so the evil clown takes its place.
Well, I think it's a really interesting idea, Jeff. Certainly the clown, like the circus clown, is a kind of desacralization of a function that was sacred in societies that were more in touch with the unconscious, where there was more of a flow. They lived in the unconscious in a certain kind of way. And we don't value certain kinds of functions. Certainly we don't value a certain kind of intuition or a certain kind of channeling of energies from, quote, the other side, whether it be from the unconscious or from, you know, I see dead people kind of thing. Certainly the clown, with its pedigree in the whole realm of the trickster, it's not a religious function. It's a function of entertainment. Certainly the clown with its painted on smile, with its mask, it's bizarre. And when you go to the circus and you see the clowns, you're supposed to laugh. They do funny things, you're supposed to smile and laugh and have fun. Meanwhile, it's going to give rise, I can see why it gives rise to the other side, to its own shadow. And the split between this happy face and this demonic energy, I think speaks to the neurotic split in our culture, where we are supposed to act out of a certain kind of persona, be happy. We're supposed to always be happy. We're Americans. Yet this other energy is, I mean, it's so prevalent now. It's so popular.
The dark, the evil clown.
The evil clown. The tattoos of the evil, malevolent clown. It's just everywhere.
You can go online, type in evil clown tattoo, and there's no shortage of evil clown tattoos. I wondered what was going on for individuals identifying with this particular archetype.
Because a tattoo is your identity. You're saying, this is the colors that I fight for. And to have that evil clown tattooed upon you, why? Why do people identify with it? What's the draw? I think it's if we go back to the function of the trickster, or even the function of the clown, the holding a mirror up to ourselves, that there is an impulse, a strong this is a kind of rebellious, revolutionary kind of impulse, saying, I don't want to espouse to the fakey world, to the mask, to the persona. I want to see the truth. I want to show the truth. I want to speak the truth. But it's a subversion of it. It's not a healthy way to express that.
You know, I wanted to mention also with the clown's frozen smile, there's also the sad clown, and there's also, I noticed in China, they had in the Peking Opera, they're all painted up, but the masks are often warrior masks because of the strategy they used to fight. So it was, they implemented the mask as a strategy to defend.
In ancient Greece, which was the beginning of drama, was in ancient Greece, and the way it was performed was that the actor wore a mask that was some archetypal, represented some archetypal figure, and the actor would invoke that archetype to channel through them and speak through them. So the idea of the mask, which was actually called in ancient Greece the persona, which then Jung used to describe the face that we show to society, and it has a function. It's not necessarily something that is unhealthy to have. We all need to wear some kind of face when we talk to different people. We have all sorts of masks we pull out and wear in relation to certain people. We hope that with our intimates, we don't have to wear that such a mask, but it's when we use the mask to hide who we really are that the problem starts.
Another movie reference, The Mask, Jim Carrey.
Absolutely. Speaking of great clowns.
There was a similar film called The Clown that came out in 2014, in that he put on a clown suit, but he couldn't take it off. Same with the mask. I think it was difficult, right, for Jim Carrey to take that mask off.
That's right. That's right. Well, there is that aspect, because if there are famous clowns in history who ran into trouble by becoming identified with their alter ego. The father of the modern clown was a fellow named Joseph Grimaldi. In the 1800s, he developed the character of the clown in a slapstick pantomime called Harlequinade, which was based on the characters from the Commedia dell'arte in Renaissance Italy. Grimaldi's clown was actually an antagonist. He was a villainous agent of chaos trying to separate the lovers Harlequin and Columbine.
We're speaking with Lori Shapira about the archetype of the sinister clown. We'll be right back after this break. If you've just tuned in, we're speaking with Lori Shapira about the archetype of the sinister clown.
Charles Dickens actually wrote a memoir of Joseph Grimaldi. And in his Pickwick Papers, he had the character of a drunken clown. Dickens is thought to have actually invented the scary clown, making people think about what is actually going on beneath the funny face. Grimaldi himself is quoted as saying, "I am grim all day, but I make you laugh at night." The Harlequinade was also the inspiration for the opera Pagliacci, the tragic clown who kills his wife, who plays Columbine. And another famous clown who became identified with his alter ego was in the 20th century, Emmett Kelly, who developed the character of Weary Willie, the prototype of the hobo clown, made famous during the Great Depression of 1929. He himself was a rather tormented person behind the clown face, quite depressed. And his wife divorced him because he was so obsessed with Willie. He was known to tell her that he wanted to have sex with her because Willie wanted sex. Kelly's grandson, Kelly's son, also took on the Weary Willie character, and then his grandson also. His grandson was an alcoholic and drug addict who murdered two homosexual lovers and claimed that a guy named Willie was an accessory to the murders.
This area, what you're talking about here, lends to the possession aspect.
Exactly.
It's more of a literal thing that's happening when you put a mask on or you paint your face and you identify with the alter ego.
Yes.
You do become a vessel in this. And I remember The Exorcist, the film. A lot of people don't remember in the beginning that Linda Blair was using a Ouija board. And And she was communicating with an entity called Captain Howdy.
Yes.
And then they would show the face of that entity really quick in the film, and it was a clown face. It was an evil clown face. Here again, another reference to the possession and an evil clown aspect.
But speaks to the idea of the need for the shaman function, and that we in our culture do not respect that, and that once you don the costume of the trickster or the clown, that you are basically setting up to be a shaman or a channel.
And Michael Balla warned against that. He said, go to clown school. Laura, you mentioned the Harlequin when you were talking about Joseph Grimaldi. And I found in one historic example, looking at the name Harlequin, it's taken from that of a mischievous devil or demon character in popular French plays. It originates with an old French term, Harlequin, Heliquin, first attested in the 11th century by the chronicler Orderic Vitalis, who recounts a story of a monk being pursued by a troop of demons when wandering on the coast of Normandy at night. These demons were led by a masked, club-wielding giant, and they were known as Familia Harlequin. The physical appearance of Harlequin offers an explanation for the traditional colors of the Harlequin's red and black mask. The first known appearance on stage of Harlequin is dated 1262. The character of a masked and hooded devil in a French play, and it became a stock character. The name also appears as that of a devil, as Alicino in Dante's Inferno. I was thinking about how the evil clown archetype evolved. Now the Harlequin was often paired with the character clown as developed by Joseph Grimaldi, as you mentioned. We now have another demonic reference in connection to the history of the clown from the origins of the clown's partner, the Harlequin. The jester, as you mentioned, is in a unique position, permitted to mock and criticize the king in areas where no other can. Certainly the jester's art was known back in Persia, 12 BC in Persia. There are Egyptian hieroglyphs dating back to Egypt's 5th dynasty, about 2500 BC, depicting jesters and jugglers. The fool and juggler often appeared with various tarot cards and first surfaced and attracted attention in Europe at the time of the Renaissance in the 14th century. We've all seen that image. The fool is paired in this as well. The fool is depicted within the card of the tarot and carries special meanings. Ultimately, it symbolizes an always ever new start, a chance to live in the present moment and transcend the unfortunate aspects of one's past. What are your thoughts on the fool aspect of this?
And how it relates to the clown. Well, the card itself, the figure of the fool, wears clownish sort of clothing. I mean, it would certainly go along with the idea of the shaman, in that the fool is kind of, he's a cipher. In fact, one of the symbols on the card is the figure eight or the a zero. He's the zero number, because he's no one. He's nothing. He's an empty slate to be written upon, and in a way, the shaman is an empty vessel to be filled with whatever needs to be mediated to the community. He's an empty vessel for the energy that wants to make itself known, a kind of a medium. And I think that does relate to the clown. But because it's so desacralized in our culture, someone who takes on that mantle is asking for trouble in a way, because any energy can come in.
If you're not trained properly.
Exactly.
And that could be another origin of the evil clown.
The energies that I was talking about, any energy, if you make yourself a vessel, unless you're trained to filter certain energies, you could channel anything. And in our world right now, where things are changing, where the whole culture is on the brink of something, we really do need to channel energies that are trying to come into our culture. But there's so many different energies. Demonic energies could find their way.
We're hearing a lot of that right now, actually, from the Catholic Church, the Vatican, and the Pope. There are a lot of
exorcisms
happening right now, and it's reaching. Laura, as we go through some of these concepts to identify and answer the questions of what the origins of this evil clown archetype that has captured the horror genre of film and television right now, and in the minds of people in this country. There's another aspect of this in the modern day, and it's a group called the Royal Order of Jesters. In the late 1800s, the Shriners were also known for putting on circuses and distinguishing themselves also in helping disadvantaged children. And part of the creed of the Royal Order of Jesters is wit and humor without malice, playfulness without destruction, hilarity without vulgarity. The motto, "Mirth is King." Another reference is the Roman god Momus, the god of satire, of writer and poets. But not to distract from the shadow archetype of the clown or confuse jesters and clowns, because they're not the same. A jester, a court jester, or fool was historically an entertainer who during the medieval and Renaissance eras was a member of the household of a nobleman, not necessarily a king all the time, and employed to entertain the nobleman and his guests. And a jester was also a performer who entertained common folk at fairs and markets. The modern-day group called the Royal Order of Jesters was known to be a fun degree without serious intent. They were called a subdivision of Shriners, who live only for the next prank. Well, a prostitution ring was exposed in a federal case where jesters were serviced across the country at hotel conferences by so-called jester girls with massive security. One of the jester girls testified that many of the jesters are well-to-do businessmen and aldermen. A former member of the Royal Order of Jesters wrote a public letter describing oral sex competitions between brothers that were considered to be fun activities and build strong brotherhood bond amid the members of the Royal Order of Jesters. Well, there are members of this group that dress up as clowns during fundraising events and to help disadvantaged children. So, not all of them, but there's something here in terms of the dark side of the clown that has emerged. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it sounds like another good example of the evil clown. dressing up like a clown with good intentions, the next thing you know, there are all sorts of strange acts being acted out. In a secret society, and reaching some level of some echelon of degree, as they call it, allows people to act out whatever they wish. And some of these stories really describe very, very evil and immoral behavior. It's like once they get into these meetings, they just completely lose their persona. It goes back to the issue I was talking about, where there's such a split in our culture between the persona and the shadow. Somehow what's missing is the ego in between that's orchestrating both. One flips between a certain kind of, you know, God-fearing, upstanding citizen, and then the truth that lurks below, beneath, and flipping into that behavior. And somehow what's missing is some kind of fulcrum of consciousness.
And it seems that the clown costume is the catalyst.
Yeah. Somehow, that mask, that, and given the rich history behind the jester and the clown, that truth will emerge, and the truth about oneself will emerge when one dons the costume.
Another interesting aspect, known as, quote, phantom clowns, where evil clowns are sighted in real life. There was a recent rash of sightings in the last couple of years that took off on social media. Michael Bala, I mentioned this to him, and he said it happened in California, too. And according to some researchers, the first reported phantom clowns include 1981 in Brookline, Massachusetts. Children said that men dressed up as clowns had attempted to lure them into a van. The panic spread throughout the U.S., in the Midwest, and the Northeast. It resurfaced in 1985, 4 years later, in Phoenix, Arizona, in 1991, in West Orange, New Jersey, in 1995, in Honduras. Later sightings include Chicago, Illinois, in 2008. Explanations for the phenomena have ranged from Stephen King's book, once again, and the crimes of serial killer John Wayne Gacy, to a mortal panic influenced by the contemporaneous fears of satanic ritual abuse. It also shows similarities to the story of the Pied Piper in Hamelin. No adult or police officer has ever seen the evil clowns, though a prankster called the Northampton Clown has been cited as a real-life example of an evil clown. Further complaints of evil clown pranksters have been reported in France and the United States, possibly inspired by American Horror Story Freak Show. In May 26, 1990, in Wellington, Florida, Marlene Warren opened her door to a brown-eyed clown bearing flowers and balloons. It shot her in the face, drove off in a white Chrysler LeBaron, and was never seen again. Her murder remains unsolved. This is another good reference of how the clown archetype is used as a vehicle for criminal and murderous acts, and of course adding to the cultural value of the evil clown.
Wow. Yeah. Certainly John Wayne Gacy, copycats. Somehow that image just, it really impacts people and affects people. You know, as we've been saying, you put on that clown suit and anything goes. You know, the real deal comes out.
A few notable mentions of films include, you mentioned a number of them, but I was going to say Clockwork Orange.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the Joker. Okay. Shakes the Clown. Harley Quinn, whose name is a play on the name Harlequin character. That's the Joker's accomplice.
Okay.
Poltergeist, you mentioned. Sweet Tooth from the Twisted Metal band. A couple bands here. Susie and the Banshees. Kiss. Alice Cooper. Twisted Sister. And Marilyn Manson.
Absolutely. How about Chucky? Well, he's not a clown, he's a doll. Oh, but he Chucky. Has that. He has like a clown face.
It does, yes. Clown House, a slasher film in which three mental patients escape and stalk a young boy home from the circus, and they're dressed in clown costumes. Killjoy, a demonic clown. Jigsaw, the clown from Saw.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween, Michael Myers, he dresses up as a clown in one of those. Insane Clown Posse, you mentioned them as well. So the list goes on and on and on. Laurie Shapira, thanks again for joining me and talking about this subject on In Other News.
It's always fun and interesting.
Laurie Shapira, a teacher at the C.G. Young Institute of New York and the former president of its board of directors. She's the filmmaker and author of The Cassandra Complex, Living with Disbelief, a Modern Perspective on Hysteria. In reading and researching for this particular show on evil clowns, I found another article a bit too late, but I have to mention it because this individual touched on a lot of the same bizarre strangeness within the evil clown archetype. And it's Clyde Lewis, the radio host of the show Ground Zero. And in October of 2011, he wrote an article, Clyde Lewis. I want to go through some of important points here. He does mention the Batman series, but he references specifically the television show, which I thought was interesting. While living in the new American century, I'm beginning to understand how a Joker can be accepted as a god or a hero. Neo-fascists and criminal celebrities are raised up for our worship and follow suit with some sort of sick and twisted idolatry and pop communion. The majority have not been schooled in the mythologies and symbolism that affect us in some devious way. I have learned through esoteric philosophy that the trickster has the ability to disguise himself and lead people into a trap. The trickster and the culture hero are often combined in ancient cultures. It was Carl Jung that gave a very interesting view of the clown turned carnival barker who collected young, impressionable souls for food sources. The word carnival itself is taken from the Latin carnis, meaning flesh, and lavar, meaning remove, as in being skinned or shed of meat. According to Jung, the trickster loves to play malicious pranks on people. His home is the carnival, and he manages to achieve, through flash and showmanship, what most people can do with their intelligence. He has the personality that appears to be gentle and childlike, and yet on the inside, the trickster is dark, conflicted, and threatening. The clown is a very ancient symbol of the shapeshifter whose expression bends and molds of a visage of death. I always wondered why people feared clowns, and as I grew older, I was able to figure out that not all clowns are evil. However, there are clown faces that represent the death mask, and it is those faces that I would like to comment on. At the moment, and this is written by Clyde Lewis, the host for Ground Zero, and I'm going through some of this article. It's a really good article, but it was written in 2011. And at this point, Michael Jackson had passed away, and people were watching the trial of Dr. Conrad Murray on television. I'm not actually following the trial, he writes, but every so often I see pictures of Michael Jackson and his ghostly, clown-like face, and I realize how much we have all forgotten how hideously ghoulish Michael looked in life. He had conflicts about race, fame, beauty, and the ability to reinvent himself over and over. Jackson played the role of a shapeshifter. In his videos, Thriller and Ghosts, he held the public spellbound because, as he exclaimed in the video, quote, he wasn't like other guys. He may have been schizophrenic or he may have been transgendered, although Jackson tried to separate himself from the occult, he most definitely exposed himself to dark arts. In the early 1980s, Jackson began to transform into something quite stranger than a werewolf. Jackson began to delve into the occult. His videos were given disclaimers, but that didn't stop Jackson from associating with the likes of Uri Geller. Geller, of course, was a CIA and NSA psychic asset. Geller was a remote viewer, one of the chosen ones who was capable of stopping the heart of an enemy with a thought. It was during this time that Jackson's looks began to change drastically. He mentions the same musicians here. He mentions Marilyn Manson, Insane Clown Posse, Kiss, and he mentions Captain Howdy from The Exorcist. Why should you fear a clown? It is simple, really. The clown represents death, shapeshifting the deceiver or trickster. The image of the trickster is a powerful one, and anything associated with it. Any triggering mechanism or meme could spark a backlash or ethereal blowback. The result is chaos. Chaos has no regard for race, creed, color, or morality. This article is really good. It's by Clyde Lewis. It's called Evil Clown Evil, and it was written in 2011. Clyde Lewis is the host, the radio host for the radio show Ground Zero. After her death from an accidental overdose, Fox News commentator Greta Van Susteren released a video showing Anna Nicole Smith, 8 months pregnant, her face painted like a clown and clearly stoned out of her mind. She talks to a doll in a baby carriage as if it's real. The video was shot by her boyfriend, Howard Stern. He asked her in the video if she's on mushrooms, and then says that the video he is making will be worth a lot of money. I want to add in that Lady Gaga had painted her face up like a clown in the music video Applause. In some theories, from a religious perspective of Christians, say it's apocalyptic. She's the manifestation of the little horn in the book of Revelation. And this one I completely missed. It was Brandon Lee, the star of the film The Crow, was in full corpse paint when he was accidentally shot in the abdomen while shooting a scene. He died on the way to the hospital. The Crow is called the Clown of Birds. On a bus ride in Canada, a horrible event took place. Vince Wagen Lee of Edmonton, Alberta, calmly attacked his seatmate, Tim McLean, without provocation. He stabbed him several times and then cut the victim's head off. He marched around the bus with the severed head, eating pieces of flesh from the body. In the recording, the police radio transmissions, officers refer to the attacker as Badger. They said he was armed with a knife and scissors and was defiling the body. The use of the term badger is coincidental when you consider that certain animals represent the joker or trickster. The Native Americans would call the trickster coyote. In Europe, he is known as the sly fox. In Asia, the animal that represents the joker is the badger. Vince Wagen Lee was Asian, and he claimed that he was now condemned to walk through the aisle of the bus like a trickster after his death. Consider again the Joker's death card and how it shows a clown holding a severed head, the beheading of the boy at the Six Flags Batman ride, and the word slaughter is the best medicine on the side of a truck that advertises carnival rides. The beheaded victim on the bus, Tim McLean, worked as a carny and was coming back from a carnival when he was attacked. In a strange coincidence, McLean was a juggalo or a fan of the hip-hop group The Insane Clown Posse. He called himself Joker Wild on his social network. He would often wear cannibal clown makeup at the carnival, consisting of black and white corpse paint. Tattooed on his back was a huge Joker tattoo. I wanted to add on these excerpts from Clyde Lewis's article, Evil Clown Evil, that was published in 2011. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for more information about the guests and links. And a big thank you to Gino Minari in Las Vegas, KIYO, 107.1 FM in Las Vegas, Nevada. They have just started to air In Other News, broadcasting out in Nevada. It's very exciting to be reaching the wonderful listeners in Las Vegas.